The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth.
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and recriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents... Normal Show Live, Marijuana Nation. Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator, Radical Russ Belville.
Good afternoon, tokers and tokettes, and welcome. It is August 12, 2010, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for joining us for the next 2 hours of news, talk, interviews, information, music, comedy, and talk radio by, for, and about the cannabis community. We're coming to you live and direct from beautiful Potland, Oregon, and Rolla J Studios. We're also the home of the 2010 Normal National Conference, September 9th through 11th. You'll hear more about that coming up on the show. Also joining me here in the studio, helping to run the show, the Ganja Man himself, Ganja John.
Hey, everybody. How are you doing, Russ?
I'm having a day, man.
Yeah?
Oh, I'm having a day. We're going to talk about it in the rant just a bit, little bit later on in the show, 45 after. I got to get some stuff off my chest. It's going to be a fun day. It's kind of personal inside baseball stuff, but you know, it's our show. We'll do it as we please. Yes. Also joining us in our virtual studio in beautiful Astoria, Oregon, the lovely and talented Cannabis Carrie.
Hello, guys.
Hi, Carrie. How was your day today?
Not quite as interesting as yours, I'm guessing.
That could be true. Carrie brings us our news right after our first break in the show. So, Carrie, what's in the headlines today?
Well, today we're going to visit a case in Texas where supporters are saying Brown County is holding a medical marijuana prisoner of war. We're also going to go over the fundraising challenges of Prop 19. But first up, a judge in Chico, California thought it would be funny to order the return of medical marijuana. He said he was joking, but the lawyers in that case aren't laughing. All that and more coming up on today's Hemp Headlines.
All right. Be looking forward to it. At 20 after the hour, we do our daily Toker Tunes, and today is Groovin' Thursday, and that means we get a talk to Tim Martin, a.k.a. John Doe from John Doe Radio.
Don't reveal his true identity.
Oh, sorry. Sorry, Batman. he will be bringing us our Groovin' Thursday tune, which is always some good stuff, from the heretofore unsued Jedi Mind Tricks band. Yeah. The Jedi Mind Tricks. We were trying to figure out how they got away with that, but yeah. Maybe they...
Underground hip-hop, man. What do you know?
Maybe they've got the force. You know, this is not the band you're looking to
sue. I got
the
force.
That's you, too. All that coming up, as well as our Law Enforcement Against Prohibition speaker today, Dwayne Sessom, and an hour of talk radio at the next hour with your call-ins live. It's Normal Show Live. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, or NORML, invites you to our 39th Annual National Conference, Legalization, Just Say Now, Thursday, September 9th through Saturday, September 11th, 2010, at the Opulent Governor's Hotel in downtown Portland.
The war on drugs has been a part of failure, and I think that we need to rethink and reform our laws.
Extend your visit through Sunday, September 12th, and you can also attend the outdoor cannabis and music festival in Oregon.
I inhaled frequently. That was the point.
Just Say Now. The Normal National Conference, September 9th through 11th in Portland, Oregon. Details available on the web at normal.org/conference or by calling 202-483-5500.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carry.
A judge in California is saying that a proposed court order to return seized medical marijuana to members of a Northern California collective was clearly intended as a joke. But the attorney for the man acquitted by a jury in the case took it very seriously. Chico attorney Jodea Foster said Wednesday that the discussion that took place in the judge's chambers last month over a motion that he had filed seeking the return of the 56 marijuana plants and more than 250 small starter clones did not seem like a joke. The plants were seized during two raids on his client's property in 2008 and 2009. A trial earlier this year acquitted his client, Michael Kelly, and his father, Sean Kelly, of illegal cultivation and possession of marijuana for sale. Jurors decided that the pair were growing marijuana as part of a loosely organized but still lawful 16-member medical marijuana collective. The two men are still facing charges of water diversion from a small creek to irrigate the plants. The request for the return of the seized plants is part of a defense companion motion in that case, and during the hearing on that order, the judge in the case, Judge William Lamb, had presented a proposed written agreement to both sides during a meeting in chambers. It stated, upon presentation of this order, 52 ounces of the marijuana retained as evidence would be returned provided the individual had a valid driver's license, a copy of a current doctor's recommendation for use of medical marijuana, and the two-page unsigned document added a further qualification. The court does not warrant the medical efficacy of the substance provided and adds that the other would remain in effect for 30 days or as long as supplies last, whichever occurs, after which any unclaimed pot would be destroyed as contraband. Judge Lamb told the Enterprise Record that it's clear by the language that the proposed order was not meant to be taken seriously, and he tried to stress that during the meeting in chambers with the lawyers. He says that because the other members of the collective were not part of the criminal case, they have no legal standing. District Attorney Mike Ramsey said that at the time, he also regarded the judge's orders as a joke based on the discussions with the prosecutor and didn't bother to read the written document. The Kelly's attorney said his understanding of the order was to take it back to his client for return of a pro-rata share to every individual of the collective. Now, the Kellys are preparing a civil suit over the raids, alleging unlawful seizure of medicine, wrongful arrest, deprivation of character, and false imprisonment.
Everybody's a comedian. Is there a whole lot of this going on in California courtrooms? Comedy writing going on? Is that what judges are trained to do? Write comedy now? Look, come on. Trying to say that this was a joke is just your way of saying, oh, damn, I didn't think they'd take us seriously. Yeah, we take it seriously. You guys are the ones in law enforcement and in the courts that whenever you seize plants always like to say, oh, those plants were worth $1.9 million, or the ounces are, you know, that's worth $5,000 worth of weed. You're always really quick to point out how expensive it is and how much it's worth when you're seizing it. But when it comes time to give it back, you don't seem to think it's worth that much at all, do you? And furthermore, this is, of course, the Kelly case that was so important in California. 56 plants, 250 clones in a collective of 16. I did the math. That works out to 3.5 plants per patient, 15.625 seedlings per patient. So three and a half plants per patient, about 15 seedlings per patient. And this 52 ounces, of course, we divide that out by the 16 people, and it's not very much at all. It's clearly within medical limits in California. It's even within medical limits in a lot of the other medical marijuana states, like up here in Oregon, where you can have 24 plants. So this is not in any way some sort of egregious breaking of the law by Kelly. The judge needs to not write any comedy anymore and understand that we take this seriously, especially these people for whom it is medicine. You can't just be withholding their medicine after they've been acquitted.
A 20-year-old Amarillo, Texas man who suffers from asthma was arrested in late June and has now been indicted by a Brown County grand jury for possession of a controlled substance with intent to deliver. That's a first-degree felony. Chris Diaz is currently in custody at the Brown County Jail. Officials said he was arrested with 14 grams of weed and hash. In Texas, hash carries a much more severe punishment, with up to 20 years for less than 4 grams, whereas in Texas, possession of less than 2 ounces of dried marijuana is a Class B misdemeanor punishable by up to 6 months in jail. If convicted, this 20-year-old man is facing up to life in prison and a $10,000 fine. Diaz was pulled over by a Texas trooper on June 27th for expired tags. When they patted him down, they found a small glass vial of hash. A later search of the vehicle turned up more hash in a prescription bottle and a small amount of marijuana and a pipe. His arrest report also says a cell phone was found containing text messages referring to a drug sale and a notebook that was described in the report as drug and law writings in it. Chris has had asthma all of his life, and only 3 years ago, he was in the ICU for a lengthy stay due to a collapsed lung. A lifetime of using steroid inhalers and other chemical medicines has caused severe damage to his already weak lungs. The young man is now trying to live an organic lifestyle to treat his condition and traveled out to California to seek an alternative treatment. He claims that he has been traveling to California for 3 years to seek the alternative treatment and that cannabis has saved his life. The trooper making the arrest stated that the medical concentrate was in a prescription bottle, but according to him, it contained more than one person would consume. Now, there's a website that's tracking Mr. Diaz's case. It's iamsovereign.org. They're trying to put pressure on the Brown County officials claiming he is a victim of civil and human rights violations and calling him a medical cannabis prisoner of war. The chief deputy on the case, Bobby Duvall, said that he is a flight risk and won't approve his release. The jail where he is awaiting trial does not serve inmates water, only milk, which Chris, an organic vegetarian, cannot drink. He's been forced to get water from a shared and filthy hand sink. Deputy Duvall joked to the media that Mr. Diaz will not be given a joint to smoke if his asthma kicks in, but he will receive real medical attention. Mr. Diaz has had bouts of asthma while in custody and was offered a common steroidal treatment, but he has so far refused, saying he has an adverse reaction to the steroidal medications.
Oh, man. Where do we start on this one? All right. First of all, 14 grams of weed and hash, and the officers don't think that would be somebody's medical use. Gosh, a whole half an ounce of medicine. Ooh, what a whole ton of weed that was. Look, officer, you have no idea what you're talking about. I know you must have missed those classes when you were going through the police academy. You know, the classes that taught you how to be a doctor? Oh, right. They don't have such classes at the police academy. What the hell do you know about someone's medical use of marijuana? This is ridiculous. And furthermore here, the guy is an asthma patient, right? And that should be fairly well documented. So here you are, protecting the great citizens of Texas from a sick man with asthma carrying around a bit of hash in his pocket. Ooh, I sure hope you feel good that you'd be able to sleep better at night knowing you took down one of the big drug kingpins, huh? And what's with this in the jail here of not giving prisoners water? Holy hell, even when we go back to the Middle Ages, we talk about prisoners getting bread and water. Right? You won't give them water? Oh, my God. You know, I guess they say don't mess with Texas. They really mean it. My advice to any medical users is get the hell out.
The funding for Prop 19 isn't quite where supporters would have hoped they would be at this stage of the election cycle. Back in 1996, the Medical Marijuana Initiative Prop 215 had many big donors, but this year Proposition 19 has attracted a few large pockets outside of Richard Lee, the dispensary entrepreneur who sponsored the trailbreaking initiative. 2 years ago, when Californians were voting on an initiative that would have trimmed prison time for nonviolent offenders, wealthy New York investor Bob Wilson spent $2.8 million of his own money on that bill that was ultimately unsuccessful. This philanthropist seemed like a likely supporter of Prop 19, especially since he has been spending his recent days giving away much of his fortune, more than $500 million so far. Wilson has been keeping an eye on the proposition to legalize, but has yet to send a check and says he doesn't plan to. He thinks Richard Lee should have waited until 2012 and doesn't feel the time is right to trust Californian voters to be progressive trendsetters. years. He isn't the only sugar daddy that is holding back this time around. Despite the measure's potential, it hasn't attracted any big money donors. Notably missing is George Soros, the hedge fund multi-billionaire who has invested over $3.8 million to liberalize California's drug laws. Lee, who has put up the $1.5 million of the $1.9 million that has been raised since through June, thinks that the big donors are just waiting and acknowledges that recent poll numbers may have made some wary of getting on board. Prop 19 fundraising is far behind the goal to reach the $10 million that will be needed for a significant television campaign. Advocates are still hopeful that the six-figure donations might begin rolling in, but behind the scenes, they are playing out less expensive grassroots strategies for the last few months before the vote. The good news for Prop 19 is that it is getting extensive free national media coverage, which may lead to some larger out-of-state donations. The difference of donations between Prop 215 and Prop 19 are striking. Back in 1996, the wealthy gave early and gave often. By this time in the election process for Prop 215, George Soros, Peter Lewis, the founder of the University of Phoenix, John Sperling, and George Zimmer, the CEO of the Men's Warehouse, had already donated $1 million each. The campaign for Proposition 5, another drug sentencing reform measure, had raised $3.5 million by June of 2008. This time around, only George Zimmer has donated to Proposition 19, and a spokesman for Zimmer told the Los Angeles Times that they would not discuss his $20,500 that he contributed. The initiative's opponents are now beginning to gain some financial ground, although it is estimated they've only raised about $41,000 so far from five different donors. But no campaigns usually start out slow and gain ground, as yes campaigns for initiatives usually get their big donations up front and early. Proposition 5, for example, drew $5 million from the prison guard unions in the last month of the campaign and another $250,000 from Meg Whitman, the former eBay executive who is now bankrolling her own multi-million dollar race for governor. Soros and some other major donors to California initiatives wanted to aim for the 2012 ballot when the presidential election would draw more liberal voters and would give the big donors more time to recover from the losses of recent initiatives. Richard Lee and Californian activists are hoping that some deep pocket donors do find the stomach to get out their checkbooks before November.
Wow. Okay. Well, first of all, I got to steal from Dusty in the chat room here because kudos to George Zimmer of the Men's Warehouse.
Yeah. My suits all come from the Men's
That's
Warehouse.
That's right. You're going to love the way you look when you're high. I guarantee it.
And, you know, every one of those coats from the Men's Warehouse always has a really good stash pocket.
Oh, really so, good stash pocket. Yeah. Just coincidence. But, hey, looking at this, first of all, to anyone out there who's of the idea that we should have waited till 2012, shouldn't go with 2010. You should have waited till 2012. Tell that to the people who are going to get arrested and have their lives ruined over the next 2 years, right? Write them a letter while they're in jail, while they're in prison, while their lives are being ruined. Ask them for some donations for 2012. That's my opinion on that. Here's what I think's going on here, folks. Kerry mentioned Prop 5 in 2008. That was a major initiative from the Drug Policy Alliance. The Drug Policy Alliance is backed by George Soros. So if Richard Lee's initiative passes in 2010, DPA and Soros will have failed in 2008, and an unknown outsider using his own money will have succeeded. MPP is majorly funded by Peter Lewis of Progressive Insurance. MPP has cut back on, or Peter Lewis has cut back on his donations to MPP in many respects, pulling the plug on Nevada's effort to legalize in 2012. Since MPP has not put this bill, you know, Prop 19 up on the ballot, if it wins, that wouldn't be a victory for MPP now, would it? You know, I'm really, really getting tired of some of this infighting and some of these conflicts between organizations that are supposedly supposed to be on the same side. And this idea that in 2010, Prop 19 is coming up and it might not get enough support is kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy if you're not supporting it. Right? It seems a little disingenuous to me to say, oh, well, we can't give our millions of dollars because the polling doesn't show that it's got enough of a chance to win. If it had some money, it would have a better chance to win. It's self-fulfilling doom here if you're not going to donate to it. And there's just a nagging feeling I've got that there's some people in some high places that don't want it to succeed for personal reasons. They don't want it to succeed because it wasn't their organization that put it together. Or they don't want it to succeed because it doesn't do all the things in just the right way that they would have done it with their organizations. Well, you know what? Us cannabis consumers out here could give a crap. We don't give two-tenths of a tick turd about your professional obligation or how you feel about, you know, your legacy and your career. We're sick and tired of being arrested. We're sick and tired of being treated as criminals for growing a houseplant that is harmful to no one. Harmful not to ourselves, not harmful to the society out there. All right, maybe a little harmful. Nothing is perfectly harmless. You can die from drinking water. But I think you get my point here. It's time for the big money donors to put up or shut up. If you're not going to contribute to Prop 19 now, and it fails, what kind of support do you expect from the cannabis community when you come around the next time asking for our support, asking for us to get behind your initiatives? You got to get behind us. We're the voters.
Break time.
Break time.
We're gonna cool down a little bit here at Roller J Studios.
Yeah, I got to go to my happy place, man. I'm all fired up today. We'll be back in just a little bit with your Toker Tunes.
It's 20 after the hour. We have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would send you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Show Live will bring you exclusive live coverage of Seattle Hemp Fest on the third weekend of August. You'll probably remember more of it than those of us attending.
Today I was walking down the street, to my surprise, yeah.
Been busted? Need a lawyer? Call the Normal Legal Committee for an attorney near you. Find one at norml.org. Remember, attorneys are cheaper than a lifelong criminal drug record.
It's that freedom. Freedom. I'm free to do whatever.
Pop Pass Records.
It's time for your daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420 friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Today we bring you tunes for Groovin' Thursday, our salute to all the dopest beats and killer rhymes that we find in the best of rap, hip-hop, soul, R&B, and funk. Brought to you by the John Doe Radio Show in Denver, Colorado. Accurate and informative marijuana reform news and entertainment. Available on the THC Media Network and johndoeradio.com. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now here's some more great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes.
John Doe Radio.
John Doe here with your Groovin' Thursday tune on Normal Show Live. Jedi Mind Tricks have been around since 1996 from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and New Jersey. The hip-hop trio Vinny Paz, Stoop the Enemy of Mankind, and Just Allah founded their group when they were in high school. Jedi Mind Tricks has six albums to date. Their seventh album, Violence Begets Violence, comes out in 2011. Make sure you check them out online. Google Jedi Mind Tricks. JMTHipHop.com. Quick and Painless this week. The song's called Trail of Lies. You heard it right here on Normal Show Live. I am John Doe. Till we meet again. See you.
Turn the television off, cousin. That ain't nothing for a girl to see. I got a niece, and best believe she mean the world to me. And she don't need to see the shit that bigger girls should be. 90-pound skinny bitches, that ain't even girl to me. Essentially, that shit designed to take a hold of you. Telling lies to your vision, take control of you. They find a different ways to take your fucking soul from you. Show about a model, make your self-esteem low for you. Everything is fake, trust me, no one that lovely. I met a lot of famous people, and they fat and ugly. I ain't any better, I just think the fact is funny. That will take a little girl and pimp her for the cash and money. And what's gonna become of them in like 50 years? When Hannah Montana turning into Britney Spears. They chew you up and spit you out cause no one really cares. And ain't nobody gonna hold you when you really scared. Where the parents at? Cousin, this is really bad. Is this the motherfucking manager or really dad? Is he concerned about his daughter or a silly pad? This ain't gonna change nothing. I just think it's really sad. Television off, cousin. It's a tool for them to clog the mind. Conservatism, liberalism, they divide the line. The natural feelings of a child is to be common kind. Then they show you ads for the Marines and they decide it's time. So they can send you to a war behind their father's crime. Then send you home and send a limit, not provide a dime. And the news tell you cops is on the block for people. I'ma put it simple and plain, cops is evil. Take the television show Cops, for example. That's the shit they want America to watch and sample. Never showing you how dirty that they really is. And that they hide behind they badge and that they really bitch. I ain't never met a pig in my life that I ain't wanna catch a body on or jig of my knife. Yeah, that's another fucking topic for another day. I'ma tell you how to try to get you in another way. They tell you that there's something wrong with you, you need they drugs. But there ain't nothing fucking wrong with you, they big and thugs. They sell drugs and commercials at the same time. Lock a motherfucker up for the same crime.
Copy of that song for your iPod? Check out the Daily Toker Tunes at the Stash blog by surfing to stash.normal.org and choosing media and then Toker Tunes from the main menu.
It only comes twice a day, but I don't care.
It's 420 somewhere.
All right, time to check out our Normal Cannabis Community Calendar, which you can find at normal.org/calendar. Today, Thursday, August 12th, is Farm Fest 2010. It's been taking place all week and will continue through the weekend in Johannesburg, Michigan. For more information, check out farm-fest.com. Michigan Normal will be representing at the Farm Fest. Good for you, guys. Pittsburgh Normal is having an open meeting at the Ava Shadow Lounge facility on Baum Boulevard in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. This is their monthly open meeting taking place Thursday at 6:30 p.m. Open to the public and prospective members. You're invited to encourage and attend. Check out PittsburghNormal.org for information. There will be a medical marijuana grow class at Muskegon Normal headquarters. You can contact Samantha at 231-769-7461 or Sean at 231-457-6069 if you'd like to get involved. On Friday, August 13th, the Midwest Reggae Fest is taking place at Nelson Ledges Quarry Park. Ohio Normal will be vending at Packy Malley's Midwest Reggae Fest, so check out NLQP.com for information on Nelson Ledges Quarry Park, and of course, OhioNormal.org for information on Ohio Normal. On Saturday, August 14th, Northwest Michigan's Compassion Club is meeting at the Horizon Bookstore in Petoskey, Michigan. They meet on the first Tuesday of the month. Check out MINormal.org for more information on all Michigan Normal subchapters. And this Saturday, August 14th, Oregon Normal is having their twice-monthly cardholders meeting. This will be taking place at the brand-new USA Cannabis Cafe, the world-famous Infamous Cannabis Cafe at 322 Southeast 82nd Avenue in Portland, Oregon at noon sharp. It's only open to Oregon Medical Marijuana Program cardholders and Oregon Normal members. You can become an Oregon Normal member at the door. For more information, check out ornorml.org. And rounding out the weekend, Sunday, August 15th, HempFest fundraiser at The Trouser Mouse. The Trouser Mouse Bar and Grill in Blue Springs, Missouri. Our Missouri Normal and Kansas City Normal members will be out there. Check that out on our calendar, the Normal Cannabis Community Calendar at norml.org/calendar.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527.
The Normal PAC, the political arm of Normal, makes contributions to members of Congress and select state legislators who support our policies and advance legislation towards that end. Elected officials need to see that those of us who support legalization are serious about changing policy, are about more than just getting high, and understand the importance of supporting politicians who support us. Please make a contribution today to the Normal PAC and send it to the Normal Office in Washington, D.C., 1600 K Street Northwest, Suite 501, Washington, D.C., 20006. Or go to the Normal website and make a generous contribution. It is an investment in our future and will help assure we finally re-legalize the responsible use of marijuana in this country. Thank you.
One of the most disturbing elements of the war on marijuana is how it has made police the enemy of otherwise law-abiding cannabis consumers. Fortunately, one group of police officers knows firsthand the futility of the drug war and reaches out to the community and to current law enforcement to end our war on drugs through legalization. It's time now to speak to one such officer in our continuing look at law enforcement against prohibition. Welcome back, everyone. 31 after the hour. I always look forward to these second and fourth Thursdays when we visit with former and current law enforcement members, members of the courts, all sorts of folks who've been involved in law enforcement, who've seen the folly of prohibition and are speaking out against it. Joining us today is Dwayne Sessom, a former Lawton, Oklahoma deputy sheriff. Welcome to the show, Dwayne. Oh, I think we're having some trouble getting Dwayne on the line. All right, we're going to have to wing it for just a little bit. Let me give you some background here on Dwayne, our guest for today. He's a public servant for much of his career. He started at age 23 when he was hired as a correction officer for the Comanche County Jail in Lawton, Oklahoma. He later took law enforcement training and became a reserve deputy sheriff. During his time as a corrections officer, he realized that many of the incarcerated inmates were people that were just busted for simple possession. So he came to see that that was a problem, that people could benefit more from rehabilitation and from treatment for any of their problems than they could from incarceration. And Kerry is working on this to get us back on the line here, so we will get them hooked up as best we can. In the meantime, I'll tell you a little bit more here. Mr. Sessoms also had a situation in his own family where his own 19-year-old son was busted for simple possession that helped to change his mind a lot on this issue. So we will bring him on the line just as soon as we can. Also want to remind everyone here listening, if you'd like to get in touch with the show, you can email us at stash@normal.org. So if you have any questions or comments, send them to stash@normal.org. And I think we've got Dwayne on the line now. Dwayne, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Oh, thank you so much. Dwayne Sessoms, a former sheriff in Lawton, Oklahoma, with Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. I was telling him a little bit about your background from your bio, how you worked as a corrections officer in a county jail, and then also worked as a deputy sheriff. So you've seen kind of all sides of this. You've seen it from the arrest all the way to the incarceration. And tell us what changed your mind about the war on drugs.
Actually, what changed my mind is when I did some work with our narcotics division a couple of times, and it was just horrible the way that they executed their search warrants. It's like they just didn't care about anything or anybody. All they wanted to do is get their arrest and pat themselves on the back. Mm-hmm. And after a while, it was just disgusting.
And so you just, you know, personally, morally could not handle this because, you know, you signed up to be a cop to protect and serve. And here it was more like to search and arrest. Is that a fair analysis?
That's exactly it. That's why I got out of law enforcement altogether, is because too many of the people I was working for didn't realize that they are public servants. They're not above the law, and they're not better than everybody else. If anything, they are below everybody else. If they're thinking, you know, rank structure, you're supposed to serve the public. You're supposed to be there to help them when they need help. And I didn't feel that that's what we were doing.
Were you able to express this to your superiors? Were you able to talk to this feeling about others in the department? Did others share this feeling with you?
No, not at the time. I felt really like I was alone, and I was younger at the time, and I didn't really think it through. I probably could have talked to other people about it. I don't know what their reaction would have been, but really at the time I felt like, well, you know, if I say something, then I'm probably going to get a negative reaction, and everybody's going to be against me, and then my life will just become hell. So I didn't really say anything, and for that, I felt just ashamed for a long time. And that's sort of why I decided to become a public speaker for LEAP, because I feel like I owe it to the public, kind of to undo the damage that I did. You know what I mean?
Is it fair to say you feel some regret for arresting cannabis consumers and other drug users?
Absolutely, because I know I have plenty of friends personally back then and still today who are cannabis users, who are very productive members of society. You know, they don't do any harm to anybody. They, you know, are just like anybody else who doesn't use cannabis. And I don't see any reason why we should treat them as criminals. They don't do anything that I consider criminal.
That's so nice to hear.
I personally don't think cannabis use is any different than alcohol use or tobacco use, or even, you know, prescription drug use under the, you know, right circumstances. I don't see that there's any problem at all with it. You know, if you are smoking cannabis or drink alcohol and get behind the wheel of a car, that's a totally different story. But if you're doing it in the privacy of your own home, I see nothing wrong with it whatsoever.
You know, part of what was written here in your bio said that you saw people busted for simple possession of marijuana or narcotics would have greatly benefited from rehabilitation over incarceration. Do you feel that that people can possess and use marijuana and maybe not need to be rehabilitated, that it's just normal use and no need to go to a drug court or a rehab?
Absolutely. I mean, it's just like drinking, okay? There are alcoholics, and there are plenty of other people. The vast majority are not alcoholics. They can consume alcohol at a party on the weekend and have no problem, you know, going back to work and you know, doing what they do on a normal daily basis. I don't see marijuana as any different than that. I don't believe that it's physically addictive. Maybe slightly because of the carcinogens, you know, like cigarettes. If you smoke it, daily on, you know, year after year after year, I'm sure there's going to be some sort of addiction quality, but I don't think it's anything close to alcohol.
Actually, I have good news for you. There's a whole lot of studies, particularly by pulmonologist Dr. Donald Tashkin out of UCLA, that has shown people who smoke cannabis even regularly on a daily basis have a lower risk of head, neck, lung cancers and chronic obstructive pulmonary disease than do non-smokers. So, you know, to even compare it to alcohol or tobacco might be even too harsh. It might even be, you know, much better for you than those things. But regardless, you know, let's not get too deep in the weeds here, pardon the pun, on the scientific or health aspects. I want to stick with law enforcement here and talk to you about this, because you have a story that many people, many of our listeners can identify with, in that you're a parent and you've had the war on drugs touch you directly through your son. Tell the listeners the story about that.
About a year and a half ago, my son and his cousins were out just driving around and, you know, socializing with other kids of their age. They have, you know, what's called the cruise here, that where they drive around and park at different places and do each other and do what teenagers do. But anyway, they were out on a Friday night, and they got pulled over because, well, first of all, he wasn't the driver of the vehicle. His cousin was. His cousin had some marijuana with him, but it was a very small amount. When they got pulled over, it was because they had a taillight out, and the officer charged them with possession of marijuana. And mind you, this this was just a small amount. It almost just amounted to his seeds and stems. Nothing really usable.
Yeah, okay.
But anyway, they did charge them. But his cousin was underage, so, and Kyle had just turned 18, so he thought he would, you know, be the fall guy for everybody, and took the charge on himself. Mm-hmm. And so he paid the fines and thought, you know, that's all there was to it. Well, unfortunately, they just passed a law in Oklahoma that if you're charged with any sort of drug, or even transporting a container in a vehicle, that you can have your driver's license revoked.
Mm-hmm. We have the same thing here in Oregon, as a matter of fact.
Right. They revoke it. They take it away from you for 6 months. So a year after this happened, we received a letter in the mail that his driver's license was going to be revoked. So this came as a total shock to us. I had no idea that this law had been passed. And so we immediately called an attorney, a friend of mine, who was going to take care of it, supposedly. But I don't know what happened. He dropped the ball somewhere, and my son got his driver's license revoked anyway. So we were out the attorney's fees. We were out the fine, original fine. Plus, he now didn't have his license for 6 months. Really? Honestly, it didn't punish him. It punished us as parents. It didn't matter. We have to drive him back and forth to work. Mm-hmm. We have to drive him back and forth to pay his truck and pay his insurance. We're basically his, you know, his chauffeurs everywhere. But and it doesn't end there, of course.
Right.
Now that he's got that chart on his record, now he's probably ineligible for any sort of federal or state jobs. He can't get federal loans and things like that. So, I mean, and just because of a very, very small amount of marijuana, it's just really, I mean, it's ridiculous.
You know,
simply ridiculous.
It is ridiculous, too, especially when the motivation behind these kind of laws, the driver's license suspension laws and such, is to try to, you know, create a disincentive for people to use. But part of why they say people shouldn't use cannabis or drugs is they say, you know, it'll make them unproductive, it'll make them lazy, they won't contribute to society. So if they do, we're going to take away their driver's license so they can't get to their work, and we're not going to let them be eligible to work for most jobs? It doesn't seem very productive to me.
No, it doesn't. Not at all.
Now,
Kyle has always been a really quiet kid. He's very intelligent. He has kept the same job for 2.5 years, and he's only 19. So, I mean, for a 19-year-old, that's very productive.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to ruin his life because he had a small marijuana a small amount of marijuana, it's stupid.
Yeah, it is completely stupid, tragic, and happens to far too many young people right at the beginning of their lives, the prime of their lives, the start of their careers, and we saddle them with this scarlet letter of a drug conviction. It does nobody any good. Doesn't do them any good. Doesn't do society any good. I did want to find out as we round out here, Dwayne Sessoms, former Lawton, Oklahoma deputy sheriff from LEAP, what you're up to now. Obviously, you're a LEAP speaker, but you're not working in law enforcement, or what are you doing now?
No, I'm a federal employee for Reynolds Hospital at Fort Sill. I am now a computer technician. I've been doing that for about 11 years now. Being law enforcement, it encouraged me to get back into school. So at the end of 1996, I quit the sheriff's department and immediately enrolled in our college here, our local college, and I actually got in to go to be a pharmacist, but about halfway through, this was in the, 97 or 98, I discovered that I really liked computers, and I understood how they worked, and I got into that, and I ended up being computer information systems.
Excellent. That's a lot of my background, actually. I worked in information technology for 15, 20 years, so glad to have you on our side. Dwayne Sessom is a former Lawton, Oklahoma sheriff with Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. Check out the website copssaylegalizeddrugs.com or leap.cc if you don't want to have to type as much. And, Dwayne, thank you so much for joining us here on Normal Show Live.
No problem. Glad to be here.
Hello, this is Webb Hubble. Life insurance is now available for responsible marijuana smokers. For years, responsible marijuana smokers have not been able to access affordable life insurance products. Normal uniquely supports cannabis consumers. Two carriers have already agreed to offer all of their traditional life insurance products at all levels without excluding individuals who smoke marijuana responsibly. Help Normal and help yourself. If you've been declined for life insurance, are paying above market premiums, or simply want to know what now may be available in the way of insurance for marijuana smokers, contact me at info@mclaughlinonline.com or simply call me at 202-293-5566.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
And you have offended Shaolin Temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Shirley, you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Rather than rant.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. 46 and a half after the hour. And, oh, boy, let's get it teed up for today because I've had one of those days at work. You ever have one of those days at work? Understand, this isn't my work, Normal Show Live. This is my fun.
We do this for free.
This is my love. Yeah. I love doing Normal Show Live. I love advocating for cannabis. I love doing the research and writing up the posts on the blog and on Huffington Post and debating with people. I love that stuff. Love it. I do it for free. In fact, I did do it for free for a very long time. The work part is my job as Normal's chapter outreach coordinator. And today I've had one of those days at work. It's actually been kind of a long 2 weeks at work here. And unfortunately, it culminated today with me having to officially suspend the affiliation of our Southern California Normal chapter, SoCal Normal. So I did want to get the word out that if you're visiting SoCalNormal.org, that is no longer or is currently not an affiliated chapter with Normal. There are some internal squabbles going on that we feel need to be solved before we are publicly represented in the Southern California area. So I wanted to make sure that people knew that in case they were reading things on the net or seeing things flying around cyberspace that led them to believe otherwise. And it's the hardest part of my job. You know, there's so many people out there that want to get involved with ending adult marijuana prohibition. They want to get organized. And the first part is trying to find the people who are serious about it, who are professional about it, and who can be effective at it, right? Sure, there's lots of us that want to get out and say, rah, 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 legalize pot, right? But, there's things to consider, you know. Can you get your message across politically? Are you a good organizer? Can you work well with people? Are you literate? Can you write a decent press release? Can you appear on television and radio and in print and give a coherent argument and something that wouldn't reflect badly on Normal? These are a lot of factors that go into trying to determine, you know, who's going to get involved in running and organizing a chapter. And I'm doing that here from Portland, Oregon, and I get requests every day, you know, probably a dozen, 15 requests a week, let's say, of people who wish to start up Normal chapters. And I send them the information and try to get them involved and give them a helping hand into forming the nonprofit and all the little things you have to do to be legal and to join Normal. And by and large, it's been a pretty successful run so far. We've had, I think, 42, 43 new chapters that have come online since I've started this gig back in 2008. But I've had four now, with today's thing, I've had four that I've had to decertify, and for various reasons. And I'm just going to talk about it because I got to get it off my chest and to give you an idea of some of what I'm dealing with sometimes. The first was the Connecticut Normal chapter. We had a chapter out in Connecticut. It was doing great. Connecticut was proceeding with a decriminalization bill, and it was going through the legislature, and it was coming up for an important vote when I got the news that the vice president of the chapter had sent a threatening email to the lawmaker, one of the lawmakers involved in the deliberations, on the eve of the vote. It got some attention. In fact, I didn't hear about it first from the chapter or its leaders. I heard about it by reading it on the MSNBC news feed nationally. So I wasn't too happy about finding out that way. So we had to disband that chapter just because it had, you know, really caused some serious political damage with you know, many allies in politics there in Connecticut. And I'm not saying that it was as a result of that, but also the Connecticut decrim bill died. So, you know, we can't say it was because of that, but I'm sure it didn't help. We also had a situation with Washington Normal up north of me in Washington State, where we had a chapter that had been kind of dormant. I hadn't heard a lot from them. People had tried to contact them and not gotten much back. But the chapter resurfaced when Washington State was pushing a legalization bill. Our own George Rohrbacher, one of the Normal board of directors who lives in eastern Washington, came to Olympia to testify in favor of the bill. Not three or four speakers later comes up the director of the Washington Normal chapter, who then testifies against the bill, testifies against a legalization bill in Normal's name. So that was problematic. So we took care of that situation. We've moved our Inland Northwest chapter from Spokane. They've been elevated up to the Washington Normal status and are doing a fantastic job. In fact, Kevin Oliver from that chapter will be helping out at the Normal National booth in Seattle Hemp Fest in 2 weeks. And then, of course, there was the Beverly Hills Normal chapter, which was I was so happy about and had been doing some great work and some great PR, but unfortunately ended up in some squabbles with some of our allies that made it impossible for us to maintain the chapter. So these are the kind of things I'm dealing with, and it seems to me, you know, it seems to be more of an issue, even though the first ones were with Washington and Connecticut, it seems to be more of a difficulty in California. Seems like I can form a chapter in just about any other state. I mean, I've got them formed in Louisiana, I got them formed in Georgia, in Utah, of all places, but when I try to form a chapter in California, it's almost like it's an embarrassment of riches down there. It's almost like they've got it too good and there's too many slices of the pie to fight over. You know what I'm saying?
I would say they have it too good compared to how you and I have it.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, there's a lot of people down there that have that mentality of God's ours, and I can see how.
Yeah, because
you know,
it's pretty cool.
You really do.
Yeah. I mean, when you can go to a concert, you know, a Cottonmouth Kings concert, right, and get a wristband and smoke pot out in the open listening, right, to great rap music.
That's
pretty
awesome.
That's pretty awesome. That's pretty cool. Whatever you call it, and I'm not going to get the discussion of whether it's really medical, not medical. Doesn't matter. The point is that that exists in California right now. You can go to stores and buy weed. You can go outdoors at concerts and smoke it. You know, it's you can grow it for yourself. Yeah, I can understand. So it oftentimes find that when I'm trying to organize in California, there's so many competing interests down there and so much money on the table. And not just competing interests from, you know, the medical side or the dispensary side or the legal side, but also the illegal side, right? The growers and the traffickers and the distributors and the toss salad anti-Prop 19 people. It's just difficult, too. It's so difficult. And I don't know exactly my purpose in this rant other than to get it off of my chest, but also to encourage you that if you're not one of those people who are divisive and angry and bitter and holding of grudges, and you can get along with people and write well and speak well and know your facts, please send me an email, chapters@normal.org. I would love to form some more chapters in California. Prop 19 is coming up. Carrie did the story about their funding and how this is going to have to be a grassroots effort. Well, Normal is the grassroots lobby for marijuana smokers. So if you want to get involved in passing Prop 19 and being on the streets and getting this passed, send me an email, chapters@normal.org, and we'll put you together.
And I mean, honestly, if a quarter, if 10% of weed smokers in California donated $10,
Yeah.
I mean, that's what, a couple bowls?
Yeah.
And then you can smoke a million bowls and be legal.
Yeah, it's like we always say, if we had a dime for every dime bag.
Right, it's an investment in your future.
Yeah, and you got to look beyond, and another thing too is with this is they got to look beyond it just being a California measure and how transformative this is to the entire nation and the entire world. Not to put too much pressure on your shoulders, but that's what we're talking about here.
We're going to call this the legalization virus, and it's going to spread slowly across the United States.
Yeah, we're starting on the West Coast, and we're going to go wild. So. Yeah, forming Normal chapters. Now, if you're interested in getting involved with Normal and forming a chapter, here are the requirements that are necessary. You need to have yourself and four other people who are members of Normal who want to form a board of directors for a nonprofit organization in your state. Yes, there's some work involved. There's paperwork involved and legalities and stuff like that. The five of you would join Normal. You could be existing members of Normal, or you could join Normal nationally at normal.org, or you could join a local statewide Normal organization, and your membership to a state Normal makes you a one-year member of National Normal. That will count as well. But the five of you get together, and you're going to form a nonprofit organization in your state. It varies from state to state. Some states it's pretty simple. You can fill it out online in the matter of 15 minutes. Other states would pretty much require you to get a lawyer to go through these problems. If it's too difficult, we can always help you here at Normal. We have some of these documents for some of the states, and we have lawyers in some of the other states who are willing to help out a Normal chapter. It's always a good idea if a Normal chapter has at least one lawyer in the board of directors. It makes it very useful for defending ourselves and defending our people, and for all of the minutiae of the filings and the paperwork that have to be done at the state level. Not required, but it's something that you might think about. The five of you get together, you form your nonprofit organization, and it does not have to be a 501c3 or a 501c4 at the federal level. You can do that if you like, but you do not have to. You just have to be a registered nonprofit in your state. Now, we also have a whole bunch of documents. We have an application that you'll be filling out. We have a sample bylaws that you can file with your state, which is a pretty boilerplate way of running your board and electing your officers and so on, collecting dues and all of that, reporting, that we will send you as well. You will form your nonprofit organization and then send your application in here to us at Normal, along with resumes of your board members. We schedule a time to speak with you by telephone, do some interviews. We take a little time to do some background sleuthing on Google and social networks to see, you know, who you are. And that's pretty much it. Once that happens, you are recognized as a Normal chapter and have all the rights to use the Normal name, the Normal logo, in your fundraising efforts, in your recruitment efforts, and of course you get all of the benefits of being a Normal member when you come to events and other things that are going on in the cannabis community. Plus, you know that you are part of the largest and oldest network of cannabis consumers organized for their own freedom. The wealth of information that you can get from normal.org alone is more than worth the price of admission.
Yeah. That's a pot encyclopedia right there.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Plus, we have all sorts of ways that we can help you out in your fundraising, like I said, by creating all sorts of Normal-related gear specifically designed for your chapter. And the network that we have a private email list that is just for the Normal chapters. You can learn from other chapters. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. If somebody's passed a lowest priority initiative in Haley, Idaho, well, not Haley, Idaho, I don't have a chapter there, but from one of the other states like Missouri, where they pass lowest law enforcement priority, Missouri Normal will send you their paperwork. You can be a part of that of this network and get that information. You can learn from the greats. You can learn from the people who have been doing this and having results for the past 40 years. From the decriminalization of 11 states in the 1970s to the lowest law enforcement priority initiatives that have passed in many localities across the country to the affirmations of medical marijuana and medical marijuana laws passed in places like New Jersey, the decriminalization in Massachusetts. There is so much to being involved in your own liberation, and it feels good to be part of an organization like Normal. I am personal friends with the executive director and with the founder, Keith Stropp, and with the deputy director, Paul Armentano, and you will never meet people who have dedicated more of their lives to ending this cruel and stupid prohibition on marijuana. It astounds me, and I'm proud to even be considered one of their colleagues.
I'm proud to be called a friend. I mean, they're amazing people.
Yeah.
Absolutely amazing.
And we will keep fighting for you here at Normal Show Live. Coming up next, for those of you who aren't aware, we are a two-hour show now.
We are. We just decided to do it one day.
So we got Toker Talk Radio coming up next with your live phone calls and the subject to be announced. It's Normal Show Live. Stay tuned. For those of you listening to the podcast, thanks. And for Ganja John and Cannabis Carrie, take care of each other, Tokers.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Take it on one more time.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it.